Hey everybody, you've reached the Mayfair Podcast. I'm Eric.
And this is Josh. It is Sunday, March 10th, 2024.
And I sound confused because I lost an hour from daylight savings time.
Did that get you? Every year. Thank God we have smartphones now that are smarter than us.
Yeah.
But my cat usually wakes me up at around 7 or 7:15.
Just like, Josh, come on, buddy. We gotta
essentially
do this.
And she's hilarious where, like, I'll get a little pat on the head or sometimes a little, like, lick on my elbow if my elbow's hanging over the bed.
That's like the serial killer thing.
Yeah.
Right? So they're like, oh, it wasn't my cat. It was the killer the whole time.
But also, it works out because it still means I'm getting 7 or 8 hours sleep. But
oh, damn you. I didn't get anything like that.
I'm not one to sleep in. If I ever slept in till a reasonable 10:30 that some people do on a Sunday, I would feel like I've wasted my life. I gotta get up and get going.
So it kills you when I come here for 11. And
yeah.
You're like, boy, I could have done it at 9, just saying.
Essentially. But I looked at my clock and it was like, 8:15? What the hell, cat?
Yeah.
And then not until I walked into the kitchen and our dumb stove had 7:15 on it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah.
No, Emily didn't know until I told her this morning, and I didn't. I had thought about changing stuff when I got home last night, but it was the worst. Well, I was for sure gonna come for cinema because my friend was gonna be up the road at Red something, Red Barn or
no, oh yeah, yeah,
Red Bird. I think that's right.
Red Bird.
Yeah, they do shows and stuff. Apparently, it's good. But he was gonna be there for a 9:30 show, something like that. So he's like, oh, I can't do Escape from New York, but I'll come for cinema. And it was like kind of crap weather, like meh, not all that bad. But anyways, and so the thing was, I had gone out Friday night to our good friend Tony's place.
You Tony! Know,
yeah, for triple bill. He didn't screw up this time. Tony, good guy. But, you know, I had been out, and then I was going to be out again, and so I kind of felt guilty, and so I was hanging out with Emily. So I basically told her, I was like, okay, I can leave at, I can't remember what the timing was, but it was something like, I can leave at like 8:15 or 10:15, depending on if I'm doing one movie or two. And so we're hanging out kind of thing, but then I could tell she's like yawning and stuff, and it's like
bedtime.
Close to 8:15, but I don't want to push the issue. Long story short, I had like an Uber cutoff. If I got it by, I don't even remember, like 9 or 9:05, I could still get here and just to the start. No trailers, but start of the movie. And so that's what I ended up doing. Like, okay, you're tired, go to bed. And then I just called the Uber, went over here. We talked about the rain the whole time. It was like kind of not the best conversation, but he got me here, so that was cool. And then I was able to watch both movies, and I was like, man, it has been a while since I saw Escape from New York. What a good movie.
All those John Carpenter movies, oh my God, they're so good.
I had seen it before. I may have only seen it the one time all the way through. Like, I can't, because I remember liking it, but it didn't blow me away. I don't know, just scenario, whatever, didn't work out. But yesterday was just, man, like, you really, it's pretty tense. Any movie, I've always liked that where it's like, oh, he's going to die in 24 hours if he doesn't get the antidote or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Ticking clock movies. I can't help but kind of get involved in those. Such a cool vibe. Cinema was great too. I'm not allowed to talk about that, obviously, but still.
I love that. I always think about what you just said with Rogue One,
mm-hmm.
where, spoiler alert, but as much as Disney is a big, evil, faceless corporation, I can't believe what they allowed the filmmakers to get away with in Rogue One,
mm-hmm.
because it's one of those kind of movies. A deadline looming, our heroes going on a suicide run adventure, and it doesn't turn out well for them.
Yeah.
And it's a movie in which they want to sell t-shirts and action figures where, spoiler alert, everybody dies.
Yeah, and it was kind of cool that they didn't really reveal that Vader was in it at all till very close to when the movie came out.
Yeah.
It was really guarded, and I really didn't know if they were going to do it or not, which sounds silly in retrospect, but you're just like,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. We all want to see him, but maybe they'll just get cold feet or whatever. And
but like, yeah, Escape from New York, there was a sense that Snake Plissken wasn't going to get out of that.
Yeah, because it's easy to watch it now and be like, yeah, Kurt Russell, you know?
Right, yeah.
But you're like, no, I mean, technically, you kind of figured he might die.
Westerns are good for that, where just everybody dies.
Yeah.
Even fluff pop culture Westerns of my youth, like the Young Guns,
mm-hmm.
a whole bunch of people die in those movies.
Yeah, and it's fun that they're now kind of, not backtracking, but now that they're getting like Andor season 1 and 2, and like they are getting more stories from the people that were like, okay, we let you kill them, but we still want to use these characters.
But even those stories, Andor is only going to be 2 seasons, whereas traditionally television was like, we want you to run as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at X-Files, which was enormous, right?
Oh yeah, long. It was at least like 22 episode seasons too, I think.
Yeah, and at the end of, I think it was season 7, I'm not an expert, but I think at the end of season 7, the powers that be were like, this is the end of our story, we would like to end it here. And Fox was like, nope, we're going to give a dump truck full of money to Gillian Anderson, and we're going to keep on making this. So you guys can leave or you can stay. Yeah. And it was this damned if you do, damned if you don't. So these writers and creators were like, well, we could leave and a whole bunch of other people will do it. Or we can try to wrangle this non-David Duchovny X-Files.
Well, they're basically like, we're going to bring in the T-1000 and see how that goes.
Yeah. But like, that's an example of, they were like, no, we're going to make this as long as we can.
Yeah.
Whereas at least now in television, they seem to allow people to say, we want this to be 5 seasons.
Yeah, and even the movies, the X-Files movies, like it was
the X-Files movies.
I don't know. Like, I was really excited, and yet you still kind of suspect it won't live up to it. There's so much. I mean, even as someone who watched, I think I watched every episode. Like, I watched all of the episodes with Duchovny and, you know, the real cast or whatever. But, like, I remember watching that movie and just being like, it's going to be hard. You almost kind of had to do what the second one did, which was more of like a Monster of the Week-ish thing.
Which is what they should have done, yeah.
Yeah, it's so hard to please everyone. Like, you're not going to be able to make a blockbuster movie that doesn't confuse people who don't follow, like, because people will go, like, who don't watch every week, or they're just like, oh, X-Files, it's on the big screen, whatever. But like, if you have it be all this, like, trying to have all the lore and please everyone, but then it kind of doesn't really resolve at the end either, I don't think. Like,
I'll never forgive Chris Carter and David Duchovny, because I distinctly remember them being on maybe the talk show circuit or whatever at the time, and they were like, no, this is a self-contained story where, as long as you know that it's a couple of FBI agents and they run into weird stuff and there's conspiracy theories, you'll totally follow the movie. And I was someone who was not a super, super fan, but had seen a lot of the episodes. And I remember sitting there watching it and just being like, I don't know who that guy is. I don't know what's going on. Why are there bees? Yeah. What? There's a caveman now? So for somebody who went in completely blind, they must have just been so confused.
Yeah, and I think I saw the whole second movie, if I'm being honest. I remember, and I can't even tell you what it's about, but I remember at one point the rumor was that it was going to be about werewolves, and Xzibit was playing a werewolf, the rapper slash Pimp My Ride Xzibit, who is playing down the street at TD Bank opening for Ice Cube in a couple of months.
Oh, wow.
Which is a total random shout out, but it's just sort of like, what, Xzibit? What? Like, of all people, you know? And I'm pretty sure he was in the second one, but I don't know if he played a werewolf or not. I can't speak to that. But yeah, it's, I don't know. Those are the kind of movies where I'm like, I feel like I should have more of an attachment to the movies, but I don't at all. The show, I'm like, sure, you know, pick and choose episodes here and there is still fun. I have no interest in rewatching. And
did you watch the comeback miniseries?
I did. And that too, I was like, you know, so hit and miss.
It had
some were good.
Same with the T-1000 era.
Mm-hmm.
It had some really great episodes in there.
Yeah.
But I would argue, and this is crazy, and it reminds me of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek, because somebody, Shatner, one of the other writers, somebody sniped that the worst episodes of 1960s Star Trek are the ones that Gene Roddenberry wrote all by himself. And if you look back, you're like, oh, wow, yeah, the one with space hippies, they're all the Roddenberry ones.
See, now I need to watch the space hippies one, because I don't know if I've seen that. Or did they smoke, like, space weed?
I forget why they went to a hippie planet. It was probably just Paramount was like, we got a bunch of hippie costumes, and we're going to make a hippie Twilight Zone, and so you got to do a hippie Star Trek.
You're selling me hard on this episode, because there has to be, oh, what's that mysterious green smoke or purple smoke or something? Like, there has to be a scene like that.
Some Trekkie's going to get mad listening to this. I love Star Trek, but I haven't watched the 60s ones since I was a kid, but I think that's the one where Spock gets high, and he's playing his Vulcan harp.
Dude, which is funny, because I actually had Nimoy. It was a comp of Nimoy and Shatner, kind of the best of their album. Because people know Shatner had music, but Nimoy had a bunch of albums.
Every entertainer of that era had way too many albums.
Yeah, and they weren't. I mean, he did have like the Ballad of Bilbo Baggins, which is pretty fun. I mean, it's silly, but you know what's hilarious is I remember buying that, and it was $24.99, which was like a lot at the time. We're not messing around here.
That's like $100.
Oh, dude, it really was. You know, especially to a kid. And I remember listening to that, and that was the first time of me hearing like a lot of these. Probably, maybe not Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, but maybe. But a lot of those were covers, and I remember hearing some of these songs like Gentle in My Mind. You know, like some pretty good 60s tracks. But I had only ever heard them done by Leonard Nimoy. And then it wasn't, and I was like,
so good.
Yeah, like a preteen, teen, whatever it was. And then I remember later in life listening to some of this stuff, and I was just like, huh. You know, like, it's a different, it paints it differently when you're listening to the original artist, not Leonard Nimoy, who
you're like,
was not terrible.
These Beatles are good.
And there was a few that were like legit great songs. Rosie or someone, Jenny, don't take your love to town, or I can't remember a woman's name, don't take your love to town. And it was like, good, but it's so funny when you hear it later, the reel, and you're just like, wow, that was kind of a, and no offense, kind of a joke, you know?
Yeah, that's like, you think about, so wait, I'll just finish my thought of the last episode of X-Files, which seems like it will be the last. I think, and you know, I'm not one to be negative, usually I like everything, I think it was the worst episode of X-Files in the 11 years of X-Files, if you put them all together.
And I can't remember, was it like the end of the, what did they didn't call it a miniseries, like whatever they called
it. Yeah, like
it was
like, what was it, like 2 8-episode series or something?
Yeah, because the last one I remember was, it was like a big UFO and Scully's cowering under it, and that was the end. But I don't know if that was the first comeback or the second
just
comeback.
At the end, just they killed people. It didn't make sense. It was just...
And then they had the space weed, and you're like, what are these hippies doing here? This is
but
getting weird.
But again, the 3 or 4 episodes that were the best in that miniseries were all the Monster of the Week ones.
I know you want to mention the Rhys Darby episode.
Of course.
Because that's the main one I remember. Honestly, I didn't have high expectations because it's just, it's so hard to recapture magic like that, especially after we tried rewatching from the beginning, and I think we made it to season 3. It's kind of like The Simpsons, you know, even the classic first couple ones, they're not all gravy. Some of them are just, and some of it is like the effects of the time and stuff, because I remember there was a werewolf one, and it wasn't that it was a bad episode, but it was just that 90s effects and the sort of, the quick cuts and all that, and you're just like, this is kind of hard to watch nowadays.
Well, it's funny. So I got like a free month of Audible.
Okay.
Which I would never pay for month to month because I love our library system. And we have such a good app where you can go and download audiobooks, and sometimes you might have to wait a little while, but there's always something there. But I've been going through and finding stuff that our library doesn't have. So I listened to the modern Halloween trilogy novelizations.
Who is it read by?
Well, different people.
Okay.
The middle one was read by Bronson Pinchot.
What?
But he's, you know, an actor. So if I wouldn't have known it was Bronson Pinchot, I wouldn't have known. Because he put on like a serious tone as he was reading.
Does he do different voices?
A little bit. It's funny with people reading audiobooks. Sometimes they just go straight. And sometimes it'll change if they're reading for a woman or a guy or a kid or whatever. But those three, they were really good. It's interesting. I'm glad that novelizations are kind of back because you can kind of get into the characters' heads a bit more and put in cutscenes. It is my controversial stance that I like those movies.
I was just like, talking about it, actually, because at Tony's, they were talking about, Tony said he hasn't seen Halloween Ends yet.
Yeah.
And I'm not really a great person to ask about that because I loved it. I don't know. I was like, I don't want to hype it, but I really liked it. You really got to quantify it because I'm just like, it's kind of like how I felt about the last Texas Chainsaw, the Netflix one, which I also loved.
Yeah.
This is like the 10th, 11th one in this franchise, and it tried something different, and maybe you didn't love it, but it's like, at least it wasn't just regurgitated nonsense.
And Halloween Kills is my least favorite, but having said that, and just listen to the novelization, I think I like it more now because the novelization kind of got into the characters a bit more, and I really liked what it was trying to do with mob culture.
Sure,
And then Ends, just like you said, but just to take a movie that could have just been Michael Myers walking around fighting Laurie Strode for 90 minutes.
Which is apparently what a strong, loud amount of people wanted.
And instead, is this such an interesting tale about generations and forgiveness and obsession. And is mostly about her granddaughter and this kid who, through a weird chain of events, has a horrible accident while babysitting, but then stumbles into becoming a villain, which it's so cool.
Yeah.
And then you still do get the Michael Myers versus Laurie Strode thing. Anyhow, so I listened to that, and then I listened to King Kong. I had assumed it was a more recent novelization.
Okay.
But it's not. It's from 1933. And I read up on it, and kind of like they do sometimes, I know like they do with Star Wars, the novelization came out before the movie did.
Oh, wow.
So imagine you're a little kid back then, little nerd kid, and you're like 12 years old. You could have read the King Kong novelization and then gone to see the movie.
Wait, so the spider pit scene must be in it then?
It is. Yeah.
Interesting.
So they have a thing tagged on where it's, this was recorded in 2005, which I think that's for the Peter Jackson movie, right?
Yeah.
So they talked to Ray Harryhausen and Ray Bradbury and Harlan Ellison, just people talking about what they like about King Kong.
Well, come on. What do you not like about King Kong?
But one writer came on and said, he knows he's in the minority and he feels bad about it, but as a kid, when he first watched King Kong in the 80s or whatever, he couldn't get over that it was fake, that he knew it was stop motion. Whereas most people watch it and are just in love with the stop motion.
Yeah.
But King Kong, kind of like you were saying about your Leonard Nimoy music collection, it's interesting to think that somebody's first King Kong is gonna be Godzilla X Kong.
Oh, yeah.
Godzilla teams up with Kong.
Yeah, it's... God. And I was thinking about that, too, where I'm like, we're now at the point now, I love Godzilla, I love Kong, I like that these movies are getting these huge budget, you know,
yeah.
And they're doing well.
Yeah, yeah.
They must be doing well, you know. But it's starting to go to the point now where watching the trailer that they played in front of Dune, it looks fun, but I'm almost at that point where I was like... I don't know. Because if I was, 5, 10 years old, I think it would be blowing my mind seeing some of this stuff. But I think I'm like, it must be an age thing or whatever. I'm getting this point now where I'm like, okay, they're just big CGI guys just punching and now they're teaming up or they're not and they're fighting whatever. And you know they won't stop. Like, there's always going to be another movie. So it's just, I'm trying not to get curmudgeon-y about it because I love those characters. And like I said, like, I want, you know, that sense of awe for not necessarily me, but, you know, younger kids getting into stuff like that. But it is weird. After a while, you're like, okay, where do we go from this? They're just big titans punching each other and stuff. Like, where do we go?
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because during the, I think it was like real peak pandemic, talk about privilege, we get to sneak in and watch movies at a movie theater.
Yeah.
So we did that a few times over pandemic, a couple times snuck in with a friend of mine and we played video games with his kids. But we were still following the rules and we were like wearing masks and staying away from each other. So one afternoon, Gwen and I snuck in and I happened to have because I never do video on demand. I watch all my movies here, but I got a free credit for a movie off of somewhere, Apple or whatever. And it was right when the more recent Kong Godzilla movie came out.
Yeah.
And it would have been like $25, which I never would have paid for it. But so got that for free. We snuck into the Mayfair and watched it here. And maybe just because of the surroundings of, we were in a world that was falling apart. Everything was depressing and sad. The Mayfair was closed. That was all stressful. And we just got to sit and watch a movie where King Kong fought Godzilla. So I could have been completely some kind of weird brainwash Helsinki syndrome, something, something. But I loved it. I really loved it. But like you said, like, there's a point where it's almost like with comic books, right? Like, I love Spider-Man. I am reading right now the most recent big crossover. It's called Gang War.
Oh, I've heard of this.
And it's Spider-Man and...
Daredevil's involved, I think.
Yeah, like Elektra Daredevil, She-Hulk, Cloak and Dagger. And it's a gang war with the Spider-Man universe.
Okay.
But you think, this character has been around since the early 60s. Stan Lee did not intend this character to go that long. He really said that. He was like, you know, I thought these superhero things would last 5 years, 7 years, and then we'd go back to writing about pirates or westerns or astronauts.
Yeah.
Like, nobody thought. So this poor Peter Parker character, he's never going to get a happy ending because he just keeps going. He just keeps having battles and conflict. So kind of like with, you know, they're going to keep making Godzilla movies as long as they keep making money. It's a business.
Yeah.
But the weirdest thing now is this. How long has this universe been going?
Oh, man.
When was Godzilla?
That's the thing. I want to say, well, I was going to say 98, but I was like, wrong,
no,
Godzilla.
Yeah, yeah,
wrong,
yeah.
Godzilla.
Has it been 10 years?
At least, yeah. Because, I mean, there's been more than you think there has.
So that's Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yeah, then Kong Island, or Skull Island, I should say.
And then Versus. So
yeah.
That's 5 movies and a TV show?
Yeah, that seems right.
And if this movie makes enough money, there will be another one.
Yeah, and I said, it is cool that they're able to... I like the tie-in stuff, and like the TV show was quite good.
Actually. It was good, yes.
Like, I think I liked that better than pretty much any of the movies, although Skull Island is a lot of fun. That's pretty easy to sell me on, though. You're just like, oh, it's a period piece set on a kooky island with monsters and stuff. I'm like, all right, tell me more. But yeah, no, it's neat to see all the tie-ins, and it's paying off, and you know, I think it is... For the youth of today or whatever, like, I mean, it's neat to have that kind of cinematic universe with monsters because, like, we didn't have that to that quality before.
So the next movie has to be Destroy All Monsters.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of building to that. And two, like, it's interesting, like, well, I was going to say competing. It's not quite competing, but just with, like, the Godzilla Minus One type of stuff versus the American stuff. It's a totally different audience, I think.
Oh, well, I think so, yeah.
It's a very different experience, and I can't really imagine. I guess kids could like Godzilla Minus Zero or whatever. It's a lot more heady experience, though, comparatively.
Yeah, and I would say, barring disaster for the film studio, I bet you the new Kong Godzilla, despite I'm sure will not get great reviews, will make more money than Godzilla Minus One.
Probably. Like, it just, I mean, the combined worldwide gross alone, like, it just seems, we were just talking about, I had read an article, I think it was talking about, like, Dune 2 trying to break even, and they were like, oh, they think it'll have legs, like Avatar 2. And I was like, did Avatar 2 have legs? And then I looked it up, and it was, like, $2.5 billion. And I was like, yeah. Josh, nobody saw that movie, and yet.
I am fascinated by Avatar and Avatar 2. Especially Avatar 2, I stand corrected where I was like, stranger things have happened. And there was part of me that was like, Avatar 2 is going to either flop or not do great.
Yeah.
Because I've said this before, but look at Guardians of the Galaxy and you see kids dressing up as Guardians of the Galaxy for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
You see backpacks and shoes and action figures and it's out there. There's a Saturday morning cartoon. There's comic books. I just don't know anybody who likes Avatar. Or dresses up as Halloween for, like, whatever. So it's fascinating to
I've
me.
I've never seen an Avatar shirt, ever, anywhere, no. Ever.
And I go to comic conventions.
Yeah, they must exist. They must exist. Even if, like, at the very least, bootleg shirts. I haven't even seen that. I don't know, yeah. Like I said, I just want people to enjoy fun stuff. But it is kind of wild. I would have told you absolutely that it just came and went.
Yeah.
And then it was like $2.5 billion. Sure.
My go-to example is always the Will Smith Aladdin.
Yeah.
Made $1 billion worldwide. But nobody saw it.
Yeah, and no sequel, at least yet.
No, yeah.
And
so,
I'm not too broken up about that, but...
And it is good at least when people say, oh, the movie industry's dying. You're like, well, no. People are still going to those movies.
Yeah, and, you know, Dune's killing it. I don't have to sell you on that, although don't go see it till we get it.
No, of course.
Yes.
Okay, so let us mention the movies that we are screening the week of Friday, March 15th.
Dune 2.
Yeah, oh.
It's not Dune 2. No,
it's not Dune 2. No, not yet. No. We will get it, though.
Better stuff than Dune 2.
So, a tiny holdover just because it's the tail end of March break. So, we'll have one more matinee screening of Across the Spider-Verse.
Oh, geez. I forgot I wasn't seeing these. Horrible.
And then Perfect Days. A nominee for Best International Feature is held over for a second week.
Wim Wenders.
And then our new highbrow drama this week is called The Taste of Things. Which was a Cannes Film Fest Best Director Award winner and Palme d'Or nominee. And I think it's one of those romantic dramas that will make you hungry because it's they're making delicious food in a restaurant.
Okay. So it's like chocolat, but not really at all like that.
Yeah, I think it's a romance between chefs in a 1889 France highbrow restaurant.
Are they competing chefs who then fall for each other after a competition or some such? Or are they just working together and they're like, hey, we're falling for each other?
I think that, yeah.
We're melding like ingredients in the cooking that we do.
Yeah, so that's our new film this week. Then we have a whole bunch of cool retro stuff, and we have the follow-up to our 2024 New York Cat Festival, which we did a couple weeks ago. So we have a couple of matinee screenings of the 2024 New York Dog Film Festival.
Here we go.
Which is a Bring Your Doggy.
Yes.
Bring your doggies.
Where are my dogs at? Here.
I want like 100 dogs here.
Yeah, well.
Well, 50? I don't know. I want a lot of dogs.
100 feels like a lot of dogs yeah. in here because you're corralling them. Are you bringing your dog or no?
See.
It's a little much.
I think she might get weirded out and jealous because she has seen a number of, like, when we sneak in and watch a movie.
Yeah.
Which we are going to do after we record this podcast.
Absolutely.
I don't know if she'd be jealous if there was a couple of dozen dogs running around.
Yeah, it only takes one dog to be barky. Not that your dog would be the dog, obviously not.
No,
but,
I think she'd be okay. I think she'd be fine. We've done it before, and the dogs have been great. We haven't had any problems. We did it once, and only like two dogs showed up, but that was still fun. But it's a nice fundraising event. The cat one was fun. One of the cat rescue organizations brought a kitty cat in a backpack.
Yeah, I was going to say there was an actual cat for the first time, I think.
Her name was Cindy Lou. I'm pretty sure it's the first time a cat has been in the cinema. Since 1932.
I mean, I want to think there's at least, yeah, there has to have been a cat incident in however, 100-ish years, almost 100, whatever.
So these ones will be presented by two local groups, Freedom Dog Rescue on Saturday and Rocky Road Rescue on Sunday.
Dang.
And I think they said they're both bringing some puppies along, so that'll be cool.
Sweet. So there will 100% be dogs no matter what.
There will be dogs no matter what, yeah. And both those festivals happen right after Saturday morning and Sunday morning cartoons.
Oh, fun.
So it's going to be quite the morning and afternoon next weekend.
Oh, man, yeah. We'll be doing the podcast at a weird time in between movies or after the start of the dog or whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
So I'll get to hear dogs, maybe, or see one.
I'm sure you'll meet some doggies.
Is there? Hopefully there'll be like a wiener dog. Those are pretty fun.
And so cartoons for the first time, our experiment is we're doing Saturday morning and Sunday morning cartoons. Some other places, I think one other place tried two Saturdays in a row because they had just gotten such a nice response.
Yeah.
We, just because of scheduling, couldn't pull that off. So I said, let's do Sunday. And my idea with that is we always have a number of people who are like, oh, Timmy's got swimming lessons on Saturday or whatever. So maybe now the families who couldn't come on Saturday morning can now come on Sunday morning. So it might split our crowd a bit, but we've already pre-sold a whole bunch. So it'll be a nice show again. And it'll be the same program both days, but a new program of Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah. And if you like slipped out of church for a little bit, you say you're going to the bathroom, but you come here for an hour, watch cartoons and slip back. We're not going to tell anyone.
No, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
So then our Ottawa premiere of a... what confused people that it was a 1970s type movie, Frogman,
right,
is a found footage cryptid monster movie that's supposed to be very funny, got very good reviews, and it's kind of Blair Witch-esque, but I think a bit lighter, and it's people looking for the Frogman.
Yeah, and I've not watched the trailer just because I've heard good things. I knew I'd watch it, so I just was like, yeah, I don't need to be sold on Frogman. Like,
I don't know where they are. I think it's American, somewhere in the States.
I did know, and now I forget. Ah, crud.
And it is a real cryptid monster.
It's somewhere, it's in Loveland, I think.
Okay.
The Loveland Frogman.
Where's that? Where's Loveland?
It's in Cleveland.
Oh, Cleveland monster. Cool.
Yeah, I'm 95% sure, because I remember, I only because Loveland was in my head because there's a music studio there, and they put out, well, I don't know, music, but anyways, and so I have a friend of mine who lives in Cleveland, not in Loveland, however, like, he, I think he's in Columbus or something like that, and I was like, oh, because I grill him about Cleveland, and he's like, oh, no, it's I'm in Columbus, and I was like, not Loveland, that's the best place, and I don't even know if Loveland is nice, but I believe they have a Frogman, so...
I've told Gwen before, because Gwen goes camping and loves the outdoors, she could trick me into going into the outdoors if she was like, we're going to look for Frogman. I would be the person in the horror movie who is going to look for the monster and does something stupid, because I would get tricked. I was so excited a couple years back. I think it was when we were in Philly. We were visiting Philadelphia, and there was a Mothman sighting, and it made the internet news and stuff.
Wow.
And I was so excited just at the thought that there was a Mothman sighting while we were there.
You were like, chapstick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's all I can remember from the Richard Gere movie.
So then, speaking of the glory of John Carpenter, we are screening The Thing.
Amazing. So my friend who was at cinema last night, it's his actual birthday, March 21st.
Oh,
or cool. Is that right? Yeah. If we're playing that on March 21st, then that is when we're going. If not, I got the date wrong. But we're coming on his real birthday. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this is a classic. I know I've seen this on the big screen. Still, it's an experience. Like, people really, like, there's something about the atmosphere of that setting, you know, really, like, draws you in.
Didn't you see it on the big screen and somebody fell asleep?
Oh, yeah. That was that time. Yeah. And so that, and, well, God, that must have been like 3 years ago. I'm just throwing out numbers. But yeah.
I just remember that because I will not say the ending. But of all the movies you do not want to fall asleep of, it has such a great ending.
Yeah. And I'm assuming I was probably doing cinema after, because I remember I didn't see the whole movie. I just kind of came in late and I was trying to help clean up garbage and pretend that I'm still a good employee here.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then that dude had just, I'm going to say passed out because he wasn't planning on it. Yeah. So don't do that. Don't, you don't want to miss the ending of this movie.
But yeah, The Thing is just one, the go-to example that not all remakes are bad.
Yeah.
And two is just this perfect everything genre. Mm-hmm. Like, it's drama and comedy, it's science fiction and horror, it's got characters you really care about, which is the only way to make a great horror film, because, you know, slasher films at their worst, Friday the 13th films at their worst, you're just waiting for the interesting kill, you're waiting for the monster.
Yeah.
At their best, you don't want any of these people to die because they're so cool.
Yeah, definitely. Like Shelley in part three, you're like, come on. Yeah. I mean, maybe you kind of want him to die a little bit, but then, or Franklin in Texas Chainsaw, you're like, you love to hate.
And it's a cornerstone of effects. Dean Cundey was the cinematographer who went on to do a ton of stuff, including Jurassic Park. Ennio Morricone.
Oh, yeah.
Did the score, which was different because we were talking about it before, how most of John Carpenter's stuff is him at a keyboard.
For sure.
So this had someone else doing the score. Makeup designer Rob Bowden, who did The Howling.
Mm.
So just an amazing behind the scenes team.
Yeah, this was a big deal. Like, this is one of those whisper to your friends movies when you're a kid. I remember knowing of it. And then literally the first time I saw it, a guy on the bus gave me like a VHS taped off of movie picks or whatever it was. They had one of those super deluxe giant satellites and they could watch all these American channels I'd never heard of, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he had hooked me up with this ripped off copy of it. And even then, though, I still don't, it's not my favorite Carpenter, but that's just because of what a crazy filmography he's got.
Yeah.
You know, you don't forget seeing these effects. Like, you know, you could argue this is, it's easily one of the best effects horror films of all time, I would say.
Well, and it's funny because the Oscars are today. It's hypocritical because we screen them and have a great time and make a good profit for the day. But The Thing was not nominated for any Oscars.
No.
Zero. So that shows you that a great movie can not win awards.
And I could totally understand. I mean, in 82, I think that it came out, you know, so it's just like, that's like E.T. and all this other stuff, you know, Creepshow, of course. That's what everybody thinks.
And it's an infamous flop because didn't it come out the same day as E.T.?
Oh, God, that sounds right.
And I think it was counter programming where they were like, oh, the teens and grownups will go see The Thing and the kids and families will go see E.T. and we'll split the box office and that'll be fine.
Yeah.
And instead, everybody went to E.T.
Yeah. And you can imagine people dismissing this as like just like a gross, you know, whatever movie. Yeah. Like, because I mean, the effects are grisly, but that's what we wanted.
I wonder, I mean, despite him, he's so interesting that he does, it's John Carpenter's The Thing, John Carpenter's Halloween. He's really the only filmmaker who does that. Even our whole lifetime is not like on the poster, I don't think it's, or in the movies, you know, it's not Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs.
No, like he did those Quentin Tarantino Presents movies, but not movies he made. You know? So not the same thing. But
I wonder at the time, did they try to distance it because they wanted it to be a bit more mainstream and sci-fi? Did they say, from the director of Halloween?
Yeah, like, I always wonder that. And it's funny, too, like, when you get enough of a filmography that they can cherry pick from the director of.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because it's not like you just had, like, one good movie or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Like, in the years to follow, Spielberg never had a, from the director of 1941. Yeah. Tagged on to E.T.
No, there's certain ones that like you want to distance yourself from. And it is always funny when it's more of a prestige thing. You'd be like, oh, from the director of Starman, you know, or Big Trouble in Little China versus like maybe you don't want to mention Ghosts of Mars or Halloween. Equal footing on that one.
Schindler's List from the director of Always and Hook.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's the BFG, you know. Like,
oh, BFG.
All
oh, I hate
great.
You, BFG.
Yeah, these are great films all the time.
So on that note of dissing our greatest filmmaker.
Hurtful. At least you probably will never have to show BFG again here, I'm going to assume.
Oh, I imagine not.
If you have any say in it.
Can you imagine if our next annual rental for Family Day is some group that really loves the BFG?
Someone must love the BFG. Like,
oh, I'm sure. It's, again, talking about Stan Lee, it's every movie is someone's favorite movie. Every comic is someone's favorite comic. So it's the thing of never disparage your own work if you're a creative.
No.
Because there's somebody out there, there's many examples like this, who love Return to Oz.
Yeah.
And that was a giant flop that nobody liked.
Yeah, I love it too, but just because of how like creepy
it
is.
Love it. Hey, I love the Ewok TV movies. So,
yeah.
You
know. Yeah, which one of which had Wilford Brimley, star of The Thing.
Oh, that's perfect. Synergy.
We've done it again.
Perfect wrap up to the show.
Love this.
And on that note, we will wrap things up. We're going to go watch Frogman.
Oh, yeah. Excited about that. And I should tell you that last night at cinema, Andrew almost got Big Shark toppled over on him.
Oh, my God.
He needed someone from the audience came and helped him because he was trying to put it on the side and it almost collapsed on him. He was fine. It was just like my friend and I were sitting right above him as it happened. And I was like, I don't know how to help right now.
And he was trapped under it. Like,
yeah. Well, it's hard to turn it. And so he tried to turn it on his own with no help. And it was just a Herculean effort and it didn't work. And so he did not get bitten this time. So.
But he was trapped under it for 90 minutes and you wouldn't help him.
It was about like that. I mean, it was too, I was helping by observing and laughing under my breath.
Oh, poor Andrew.
We love him.
So thanks for listening, everybody. You can find out more information on upcoming movies at mayfairtheater.ca and on all the social medias. And we'll be back next week with maybe we will remember to do an Oscar wrap-up show.
Oh, that's smart. I'm looking forward to that.
Let's do that. Okay. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Oh, and last night, Lee asked me to host cinema at the end of the month.
Ooh.
So get psyched for March 29th or 30th. No, 30th.
Mark your calendars.
Yeah, yeah. Forget the 29th. We don't care about that.
We need some help down here. Something in the ice. We found something.
John Carpenter's The Thing. Screenplay by Bill Lancaster. The Thing. The ultimate in alien terror. Rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.